Welcome to the Old Time Radio Hour with your host, Justine Ward. This week, we turn again to a life of crime with Crime Classics. This series found its stories in historical documents, and the two episodes we are presenting this week both feature crimes that took place centuries ago. The series aired for about a year, from 1953 to 1954. It was inspired by actor-director Elliot Lewis and his interest in historical murders. His great collection of historical source material provided the writers with stories they could adapt for the series. First, we have Crime on the High Seas with Crime Classics, The Good Ship Jane, first broadcast February 24, 1954 on CBS.
Good evening. This is Crime Classics. I am Thomas Highland with another true story of crime. Listen. The sound of brace and bit boring into wood. Good wood, mahogany, a hard wood. And since this is 1821 and the tools weren't as finely tempered as they are today, a resisting wood. One needed to really lean into it, give it muscle. Here's something. Water coming in at last. But how slowly. Just boring holes in the bottom of the ship. That's no way to scuttle it.
Here's an axe.
As I said, mahogany is a good, hard wood. Fine for ship's keels. Doesn't hold up under an axe, though. Here comes the Atlantic Ocean. Tonight, my report to you on The Good Ship Jane, Why She Became Flotsam.
Crime Classics, a series of true crime stories taken from the records and newspapers of every land, from every time. Your host each week, Mr. Thomas Highland, connoisseur of crime, student of violence, and teller of murders. Now, once again, Mr. Thomas Highland.
Let's talk about schooners for a moment. The first one ever built was in Gloucester, Massachusetts, in 1713, by Captain Andrew Andy Robbie Robinson. The schooner is a fore and aft rigged vessel and was much used in fishing in its earliest days. However, it was soon used as an ocean trader, taken as it was into the hearts of ship owners, since it used a smaller crew. The vessel that concerns us here is Jane of Gibraltar, brig rigged fore and schooner rigged aft. She'd carry from 90 to 120 tons and had seen service on all of the seven seas. The Jane was weighing anchor at Gibraltar. On her way to Brazil, her captain was Thomas Johnson, her cabin boy, a youth from Malta named Andrew Camelier, and in the captain's cabin,
10 pipes of sweet oil, 120 barrels of beeswax, 14 round jars of fine oil.
Boy.
Yes, Captain?
How old are you, boy?
16, sir.
You understand the promise I made to your father, boy, that I would return you a man?
Yes, sir.
Continue with the manifest, boy.
300 oblong jars of olives, 14 boxes of raisins, 19 bolts of silk.
Boy.
Yes, sir.
Your father said you were meek, too long, milk fat. And soft. We'll harden you, boy. Put leather where now there's down on your cheek.
Shall I go on with
boy?
The... Yes, sir?
Soften that blonde hair of yours with sea spray and muscle those thin arms. Boy.
Yes, sir?
What have you got in your hand?
Your watch, sir?
I know it's my watch. And I know it was right here on my desk a minute ago.
Well, I fidget, sir.
So your father told me. Put the watch down.
Yes, sir. My father also gave me a book called Tales of the Ocean.
Never mind that. The one with the manifest.
That's all except the dollars, sir.
Read the manifest, boy.
6 18-gallon casks and one of about 9 and one of about 7 gallons. All filled with Spanish dollars to the number of 38,000. All the above to be delivered to Jose Miguel de Faria, Bahia, Brazil.
You watch your P's and Q's, boy. Stop fidgeting!
Yes, sir.
After which, Andrew never tried to steal the captain's watch again. Instead...
Captain, I saw Seaman Smith opening a cask in the hold and dipping into the olives.
The youth quickly developed a sense of loyalty to his captain and the ship and its cargo. And the captain sensed it.
Good boy.
And did his best to instill the youth with a sense of responsibility. And the next day...
You may flog Seaman Smith, boy. Here, take a whip. Now, don't flinch. Good boy.
And nearly skinned Seaman Smith alive. A youth 2 weeks at sea and manhood busting through all over. Yet with a streak of gentleness.
Mate Hyman.
Yeah?
I came down here to cruise quarters to see how Seaman Smith feels.
I've seen whipping before, lad. But I got to hand it to you. You're a scientific whipper, you are. And that the truth, Frenchie?
Oui.
Yes. Old Frenchie's seen whipping, too.
Oui.
You're a one, you know that, lad? Rumply blonde-haired boy like you with cherub face and a whipper like you.
I didn't want to do it. Captain ordered me. I'm so sorry, Mr. Smith.
Can't hear you, laddie.
Well, tell him how sorry I am. I had to flog him unconscious.
There's a question I'd like to be asking you, lad.
Yes, sir?
Because the crew's all asking it. How did the captain know in the first place that Smitty there was thieving? You tell, Captain, little pink cheeks.
Please.
Please what?
Leave me alone.
Snitcher, ain't you,
Pinky? You leave me alone, or...
what?
You see this knife, don't you?
You see this knife, don't you?
Please leave me alone.
Look at him, Frenchie. Look at him with the knife.
Oui.
Funny, ain't it? Well, I'm going to tell you what, laddie. Playing with knives, you be, eh? Well, now I'll be playing, too. A sticking game. You'll be all over the deck in a second.
Please!
That's your lady.
Please let me alone.
Now, look, laddie, take that knife away from my throat.
Then will you let me alone?
Oh, well, you was just gaming, laddie. You're a good gamer, you are. Put the knife away from my throat, laddie. Yeah. That's the laddie.
Yes, sir.
He's the one, ain't he, Frenchie?
Yeah, we...
Please, let's be friendly.
Oh, we're shipmates, we are.
My father told me to make friends.
Shipmates, we are.
Oui.
The captain doesn't like me.
Don't he now? And you such a gamer and a nicey.
He thinks I want to break into the hold and steal all those Spanish dollars and husks. Just because I know where the keys are.
Do you now?
38,000 in Spanish dollars.
Them's the best kind. That's what's in those casks, eh?
Oh, yes, sir.
I could use some of those dollars, couldn't you, Frenchie?
Yeah, oui.
Now, don't you tell the captain I told you about...
All those dollars? Oh, no. We're shipmates.
I'm glad I've made friends.
Yes, oh, you have.
But Mr. Patterson doesn't like me either. He's with the captain all the time and takes watch over him when he sleeps and...
Mr. Patterson don't know true quality in a lad.
Mr. Patterson's outside the captain's cabin right now.
On such a black night.
He hates me.
And we your friends. Come along, Frenchie. Mr. Patterson for you. Sleeping under the stars from a belaying pin.
If he awakens, he'll raise an awful row.
Oh, you know where that key is to the dollars, lad?
Yes, but if Mr. Patterson wakes up...
Frenchie.
Oui.
Throw Mr. Patterson overboard.
Oui.
Wait. I read in the book, it was called Tales of the Ocean Sea, how bad pirates used to tie iron to the legs of victims.
Oh.
So they wouldn't float. So I brought a piece of iron along. Here it is.
Frenchie, lash the iron to Mr. Patterson's legs so he won't float.
Oui.
Let's see the captain now, lad.
Yes, sir.
K.
Wilson's a very sound sleeper. Here's his gun.
Be careful how you point it.
Blimey. Shot the captain right between the eyes. That's what you did, lad. Right between the eyes, I tell you. Deader than a pickled mackerel from Cooper's Coast, he is. Blimey. Oh, lad, I know how you feel, lad. Accident, weren't it, lad? Yeah, you go on and weep. It'll do you good.
That night, Andrew cried his heart out. So forlorn was he for having shot his father's friend and his captain that he did not venture above deck. And that's where all the activity was.
Here, tie this piece of iron to the captain's leg, Frenchy.
Oui.
And using a ship shank knot and a 25-pound weight, they prepared the captain for sinking. Sank him. These few hours' activity was known as piracy. There was also murder. Altogether a night of perfidy, sprung as it did from the innocence of a 16-year-old boy's suggestions. Just because the youth has read the long-since-banned book, Tales of the Ocean Sea, just because his father had gotten him a berth aboard ship, just because his father wanted to make a man of him. But Andrew still had a long way to go.
Boy.
Never knew a soul could acorn like this.
But it can.
Oui.
Where's the key to the dollars, boy?
There. Beneath the captain's pillow.
Frenchy. Now, Wilfred.
Wait.
Yes, lad.
What did you do with the captain?
As we did with Mr. Patterson.
Now there are 8 of us. But Smitty cannot work.
No, not since the flogging you give him.
And have you noticed that Mr. Strawn is feeble and recovers poorly from his drinking?
It's true. What are you saying, lad?
Nothing.
Reggie.
Oui.
There are 8 of us now, but 2 of us ain't very useful. Ain't no sense having them around to divide those dollars with. Frenchy?
Oui.
What Mr. Hyman and Frenchy did was unlock that section of the hold where the dollars were kept, remove the casks, and insert 2 of their shipmates, Mr. Smith and Mr. Strawn. It was then that the lad Andrew appeared on deck.
What are you going to do with those tar pots, Mr. Hyman?
Fire them and lead the smoke into the hold where Smithy and Strawn are?
Why, then they'd suffocate. Frenchy?
Oui.
You are listening to Crime Classics and your host, Thomas Hyland. Hear Marlena Dietrich as Diane LaVolta in a new adventure in colorful Spain. The sultry-voiced chanteuse helps a great bullfighter out of his difficulties in a story titled The Man Who Wanted to Die. Remember, tomorrow and every Thursday night on most of these same stations, the Star's Address brings you Marlena Dietrich in Time for Love. And now once again, Thomas Hyland and the second act of Crime Classics and his report to you on The Good Ship Jane, Why She Became Flotsam. Some words about piracy.
Next to being a sailor, being a pirate is man's oldest profession since he took to the sea. There is literature concerning this type of criminality all the way back to the Phoenicians. The Vikings were great pirates, and you'll be interested to know that during the Roman Civil Wars, the city itself was all but starved to death by the incursion of the old Etruscan pirates. Now, many of you undoubtedly think that piracy is a matter of the crew of one ship plundering another. Not so. As far back as the plunder of the barkentine Athena in 1702, the Admiralty ruled that a crew which mutinies and murders its captain and plunders its cargo and steers the vessel off course, perhaps toward a different continent, a crew which does these things is lumped under the heading of pirates. Therefore, the crew of the schooner Jane of Gibraltar were pirates. Of this, there can be no doubt.
Well, I say let's take it to Africa, mates.
Hey, Africa! Africa!
Then Africa it is.
Helmsman, change your course. South by southeast.
Aye, aye, south by southeast.
Africa it is, lads, with Spanish dollars to fling and Spanish dollars to spend. Lad, Andrew.
Yes, Captain?
You're nearly done, lad.
Aye, Captain. Each of us, now that we are six, will receive $6,300.
Ah, you hear that, lads? 6,300 Spanish dollars for each of us. Oh, Morocco, Tangiers, Cairo.
Captain.
Oh, you like Africa, you bonny lad. Whoa, the sights I can show you. And you, the curly-headed blondie lad you are, you'll have the ladies nippier than Thurston's kitty.
Captain.
Yes, lad.
The African seas are filled with pirates.
What are you saying, lad?
I've heard. Corsairs from Tripoli and Turks and Saracens.
And what?
I'm frightened.
Well, then be frightened, lad. What do you expect us to turn tail about and go to England, maybe, or...
Scotland.
Scotland?
With their lonely shores and their long, lonely beaches, we could get ashore and nobody would know what.
Ah, wouldn't be any pirates, either.
Oh, no.
Scotland. Bonnie Scotland.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, Scotland it is. Helmsman, change your course. North or north-west?
Aye, aye, north by north-west.
And they sailed in that direction for 17 days. It was a singularly uneventful voyage. In passing other ships, they hoisted the American colors, identified themselves as the Rover, 30 days from New York, bound for Archangel. And Hyman went about clothed in the captain's green greatcoat. The boy Andrew stayed below most of the trip, reading. But one day, when Hyman brought him his breakfast, the boy looked up from his book and he said,
"When are you going to give orders to scuttle a ship, Captain?"
Scuttle it, lad.
Else there'll be surely someone in Scotland who'll recognize the ship as a Jane and ask of the captain.
Scuttle it, I say.
Off the Cape of Stornoway.
Off the Cape of Stornoway.
And two nights later, within sight of the Scottish coast at Stornoway, you remember, Hyman began to drill holes in the bottom of the boat.
Here's an axe.
Yeah. Oh.
Sir.
What is it, you bonny lad?
I think you should give orders to man the longboat.
Pull! Get your backs into it, men! You, what's the matter with you, Jura?
Tide! Against us! We never make it shore!
Oh! Pull, I tell you!
There she go! There she go!
Back!
I lost me my oar! Catch she go!
Ah, you stupid lump thumb! Damn with them Prescott symbol! Ah, now, lad!
Never! Oh, never!
Ah, what are you saying, lad?
You never get the shore! All drowned in our chest of money will lie at the bottom of the sea.
Oh, now, lad.
The things you forced me to do, the terrible things.
Lad.
The awful things.
Now hear this. What the sea did. It sent a huge and wonderful wave to the scene. And this huge and wonderful wave did this. Lifted high the longboat, the dollars, and the sailors, and on a narrow strand of beach, put them down again. This huge and wonderful wave.
Blimey. Ain't this something, Frenchy?
Oui.
Wave tossing us boat and all right to shore. Lad, Andrew, lad.
Yes?
We're saved.
Yes.
Yes, we're saved. We're saved. Give a cheer, lads. We're saved. And it's this bonny lad that's the cause of it all. This lad, this Andrew. This curly, blundering Andrew lad. Oh, lad, it is a great and good luck thing to know you. To sail with your likes.
Thank you.
Thank you, he says. Hey, such a lad. Such a lad you are.
But the rest of that night was a terrible one. The fury of the skies and the sea over that narrow strand, and six men huddled there, not daring to move, lest they lose their way in the dark and stumble into the torrent. Yet, even in these small hours of despair, they had presence of mind enough to bury, each of them, part of their Spanish dollars.
And we should take an oath of secrecy.
And they, each of them, took a terrible oath, swore never to reveal what had happened, nor of the money, nor the murders. A good thing, too, for the next day, a suddenly becalmed and sunny day.
Ahoy! Ahoy there!
A group of men came running up the beach toward them.
Ahoy there!
Hello!
What do you here?
Our boat broke up in the sea, and praise be for a sturdy longboat. Who be you?
Roderick MacIvers.
We be off the ill-fated catch, the Betsy, out of San Francisco.
I am MacIvers, surveyor of customs. These are my men.
Oh?
And we'll want to look at your sea chest.
Oh.
You, Colonel, open me that sea chest, for instance, and I'll have a look. Now, we'll see. Now, what's this? Dollars now. Spanish dollars. Now, you.
Please, sir.
How come a blundering boy like you with such scurvy lookers, eh?
Yes, sir.
Colonel, stand guard here while I fetch a brace of constables to this spot. This has the looks of I don't know what, but I didn't like it.
Please, sir.
How old be you, boy?
16, sir. There's never been a razor to my cheek.
Hail ya.
If I could see my father. Sir?
Yes, lad?
Could I walk with you?
Curly-headed boy could be my own son, almost. Surely, walk with me.
I have something to tell you, sir.
Oh, what happened?
Sir.
Lad, what?
They held me prisoner out of Malta and murdered Captain and Mr. Patterson and nice Mr. Smith and Mr. Strawn. They suffocated the nice Mr. Smith and Strawn with smoke from a tar barrel and stole those Spanish dollars.
Are you saying the truth?
I'll take an oath on it.
And you'll so testify, lad?
I want to.
Go on, lad. Continue with your story.
And I struggled with Mr. Hyman with the pistol, and he overcame me and killed Captain.
And then?
I had that one who we call Frenchy tie iron to Captain's leg and throw him overboard.
And then?
Suffocated two others with smoke from a tar barrel.
How old are you, lad?
16. My father's far away in Malta.
I must tell you, boy, as a father myself and as judge in the court of law, that ne'er have I witnessed such a courageous lad as you. You are as candid a witness as e'er appeared before me. Your manners are modest, and your statements are sincere and distinct. And it is to your due that justice is trying the case of these men, Peter Hyman and the Frenchman Francois Gautier. You may step down, boy. Peter Hyman and Francois Gautier. The rest of your crew has been dismissed as not guilty of the heinous crimes as charged. But the jury has found the two of you to be beasts of the sea and guilty as charged. Therefore, I announce to you the sentence of death, which will be forthwith put into execution. Though your crimes as charged be murder and piracy, to my mind your guilt is of a far greater kind. The scar is slashed across innocence. The innocence of that youth sitting there, gentle child of blundling curl, bravely hiding the scalding hurt. Vipers! And upon the second Wednesday of January next to come, you will be dead.
I have here an account of the execution. The two men, Peter Hyman and Francois Gauthier, ascended the drop at 11:20. They remained on the platform for some minutes, being administered as they were by men of the cloth. But observers noted that neither one seemed to listen to prayers, nor did they repeat any supplications. Rather, did they merely stand there and shake their heads as if, some observers say, they did not believe what was happening to them. In the pressing crowd of onlookers was seen Master Andrew Camelier, close to the front, smiling and bowing to those who recognized him. Andrew Camelier, I should tell you, never went back to Malta, nor to sea. He was married next year to the comely daughter of a widower, and when his father-in-law shot himself to death in 6 months' time, he inherited a large sum of money.
In just a moment, Thomas Highland will tell you about next week's crime classic. The Good Ship Jane, tonight's crime classic, was adapted from the original court reports and newspaper accounts by Morton Fine and David Friedkin. The music was composed and conducted by Bernard Herrmann, and the program is produced and directed by Elliot Lewis. Thomas Highland is portrayed on radio by Lou Merrill. In tonight's story, Gary Montgomery was heard as Andrew and Ben Wright as Hyman. Featured in the cast were Herb Butterfield, Paul Frees, Steve Roberts, and William Johnstone. Bob Lamond speaking. Now here again is Thomas Highland.
Next week, Suffolk, England, in the year 1676. We will concern ourselves at that time with a rousing croquet match, a fine old castle at stake, winner take all. It's listed in my files as Roger Nims, how he, though dead, won the game. Thank you. Good night.
This coming Sunday, CBS Radio's Department of Public Affairs offers a documented progress report on the Negro in America, titled The High Mountain. Narrators will be William H. Hastie, United States Court of Appeals judge, and Admiral Alan G. Kirk. The same production team that brought you Bomb Target USA, 38th Parallel, USA Parole File 732, and other hard-hitting factual documents about life in America, now turns its attention on the High Mountain for a look at the progress and problems of the Negro in America. This Sunday, on most of these same stations. You hear America's favorite shows on the CBS Radio Network.
Narrator Thomas Highland is a character played by actor Lou Merrill. You are listening to the Old Time Radio Hour, and I'm your host, Justine Ward. We broadcast the show each week over the World Wide Web. Free subscriptions are available through iTunes, Podbean, or RSS. Next, we have another episode of Crime Classics. The setting is a dark New England jail long ago. Enjoy Crime Classics, Mr. Jonathan Jewett. First broadcast, June 2nd, 1954, on CBS.
This is Crime Classics. I am Thomas Highland with another true story of crime. Listen. The High Sheriff of Hampshire County, Massachusetts, and deputies carrying a coffin down the prison corridor, stopping in front of the cell of Mr. Jonathan Jewett, and opening the door.
Brought you something, Mr. Jewett. Brought you your coffin. Sit it down right here, men. You'll find your hanging cap inside, Mr. Jewett. I'd advise you to try it on to see it's not too tight. There's been trouble on the gallows with a too tight hanging cap. Look in on you later.
You won't hang me! You won't hang me! You won't hang me!
Tonight, my report to you on Mr. Jonathan Jewett, how most peculiarly he cheated the hangman.
Crime Classics, a series of true crime stories taken from the records and newspapers of every land, from every time. Your host each week, Mr. Thomas Highland, connoisseur of crime, student of violence, and teller of murders. Now once again, Mr. Thomas Highland.
Nobody thought of rehabilitating criminals in 1815. To catch a man who committed a crime, or didn't pay his debts, or was not well enough liked, throw him into the local lockup and forget him. It was no different in Hampshire County, Massachusetts in this era. The jail was bleak and consisted of a series of stone pits of correct moisture content for the growth of a fungus on its surfaces, of good temperature range to permit the flourishing of rats and some invertebrates, of foul nourishment to quicken the descent of man into rot. Now, in a certain pit in this prison called Cell 4, lived three men together. George Bowen, pacing. The caged brute, pacing. Isaac Mitchell, humming. Motionless, shaggy Isaac, humming.
18, 19, 20.
Lee Partridge, counting, doing what he most liked to do, counting the cracks in stone from ceiling to floor. Tableau.
Get along, Johnny. Fast. Fast, lad, or I'll drag you, so help me, in a way you won't care for much. Get along. I said it, Johnny, and I mean it. Now, here. Get in. Your home it is, Johnny. And don't take to it too nicely, because you won't stay too long.
Sheriff?
Yeah, Bowen?
New one, Sheriff? What's he done?
Kill him a woman.
Oh, now?
Hang
him?
Month from today, Bowen. He'll kick at the wind. Month from today.
One, two, three, four, five, six...
Stop!
Seven.
Stop it!
George, now!
Now, George, now, you! Now, George, now! George, now, you! You start humming more, Isaac, you get the same.
George?
What do you want?
Listen, George.
What?
Well, why don't we talk to the one just came in? Why don't we slip out the stone and talk? That's right, George. Talk to him.
Shh, you. In there. Hey there, you. You in there. Over here. Can't see me. Come here to the wall. Bend down now. Halfway to the bottom now. I've taken the stone out so there's a hole big enough to see through. Bend close now. My name's George Bowen. What's yours?
Jewett. Jonathan Jewett.
Murderer, I hear.
Didn't mean to.
A woman, I hear.
Didn't mean to.
Tell me about it. Tell me.
Didn't mean to.
Tell me! Well, welcome, old Johnny Jewett, lad. We're cellmates, we are, and we're sharing things now, we are, old Johnny Jewett. Tell me now how you happened here. It was a lady I hear. Please tell me.
I met her at at Boswick's Tavern. She was sitting there and she had yellow hair.
No more you'll tell me, Johnny. For now, she was sitting there and she had yellow hair. Save the rest for later, Johnny. Talk a little later, Johnny.
Well, that's just the start.
Yellow hair. Isaac, Blee, he killed a lady, and she had golden hair that shined and was soft as any silk you ever touched.
Going to hang him.
Poor boy. Poor boy.
Going to hang him.
And we won't get to see it.
Now, this was one of the biggest frustrations of all. The three friends never got to see anyone hang. The gibbet was outside the north wall of the jail and so situated they could see nothing. Isaac, who had extraordinary hearing, often claimed he heard the trap door drop, and the three of them would feel then somewhat entertained. And so the days of emptiness spun away, but now, with the arrival of Jonathan Jewett, there was a very pleasant diversion. And this is what it was. George Bowen would pull out the stone.
Jewett? Tell me. Tell me more.
Yellow hair and apple cheeks. Tall for a woman and walked easily.
And a few hours later...
Jewett?
Walked easily and... And the first time I saw her, she came to me like some floating thing.
That was enough for a while. Enough of the story. But one day, you remember.
All right. Lively. Lively, men. And right in here. Brought you something, Mr. Jewett. Brought you your coffin. Set it down right here, men. You'll find your hanging cap inside, Mr. Jewett. I'd advise you to try it on to see it's not too tight. There's been trouble on the gallows with a too tight hanging cap. Look in on you later.
You won't hang me! You won't hang me! You won't hang me!
Johnny... Johnny Jewett, come here. Come here a minute, Johnny.
Like some floating thing. Her name was Hannah.
No, listen. I don't want to hear that right now. Listen. They brought your coffin, didn't they? Hanging cap's inside, isn't it?
Bowen.
Uh-huh.
What's it like?
What?
Hanging. A public hanging.
You really want to know, Johnny?
I want to.
A show. Big show. There's some women's always there. And I've seen them. Come over and pinch your cheeks before you go up the stairs to the hangman. And the things they say... And there's people there that always cry, same people all the time. And kids running around and hawkers. And you'll be a show, Johnny. A big show. There's...
What's the matter?
Johnny.
What? What is it?
Wouldn't hang me.
Why not?
Wouldn't hang me, Johnny.
What, Bowen? Bowen? Bowen, tell me! Bowen! Bowen, open up the door!
Fun, Isaac. Oh, I tell you, we'll have fun. Bleed.
Don't hit me.
Not going to hit. And I tell you, we're going to have fun.
Don't hit me.
We're going to have fun. See? He's been knocking like that for the last 10 hours. Think I ought to open it to him?
Go on. Go on. Go on.
Fun. Isn't this fun? Of course it's fun. Was you knocking on the wall, Johnny?
Please, please.
Please what?
Listen.
Yeah.
I'm not gonna tell you about Hannah anymore.
Unless I what?
Tell me how you wouldn't hang.
You want to know, Johnny?
Yes.
Really want to know, don't you?
Yes.
Can't stand the thought of those people jeering you to die. Can't stand that, can you?
Please tell me. Please, please.
Sure. I'll tell you.
Yes.
Hang yourself, Johnny. Hang yourself, Johnny. Hang yourself, Johnny. Hang yourself. It's easy. It's easy, Johnny. Do it. Do it. And I'd be the only one to watch. Isaac don't want to watch. Neither does Blee. Just me. Do it, Johnny. Cheat them, Johnny. Cheat the hangman. Cheat the crowd. Oh, do it.
Bone?
Oh, do it, Johnny.
How?
You are listening to Crime Classics and your host, Thomas Highland. Is there a possible connection between a strange ivory monkey and the death of a wealthy oil magnate? Mr. Keene believes so and sets out to prove his contention in The Case of Murder and the Ivory Monkey, Friday night on CBS Radio. Don't miss Mr. Keene at his exciting best this Friday evening on most of these same stations. And now once again, Thomas Highland and the second act of Crime Classics. And his report to you on Mr. Jonathan Jewett, how most peculiarly he cheated the hangman. Winters, they say, are not as bleak today or as furious as they used to be in Massachusetts. Some storms in Northampton, I've heard it recalled, appeared from the north like shining pellets, swirled in, exploded. Then the snow was composed of great northern glaciers and frozen sea spray, and another thing, a vast desolation from the pits of the world. And so it was in 1815. The winter broke early, and the first snow blanketed the village, piled high the drifts against the stone of the jail, sent bitter winds down its freezing corridors. Condemned man Jonathan Jewett, not knowing any longer whether he shudders from cold or a soul numbed with terror.
Cold! Cold!
Said a prisoner named Blee Partridge and hugged his bluing arms about him. Isaac Mitchell sounds from the frozen recesses of his mind. George Bowen having fun, watching Jonathan Jewett through a hole in the wall.
George? George?
Yeah?
What's he doing?
Well, well.
What's he doing, George?
Interested, ain't you? Now you're interested.
Tell me what he's doing.
Staring at his coffin.
Now tell me what he's doing.
Shivering.
What's he doing now?
Looking at his coffin.
Now?
Opening the lid to it.
Now?
Taking out the hanging cap.
What's he doing? What's he doing, George?
He's starting to put it on.
No! No!
Johnny, come here, Johnny.
He didn't put the hat on, did he?
Come here, Johnny. Come. Hello, Johnny. Now, why do you get yourself all riled up like that? Trying to put on your hanging cap. Now, yesterday, you asked me how to hang yourself. So you won't have to go through all this, laddie. And so you won't hang in that freezing and all.
How?
You're going to do it, Johnny? You're going to do it?
I don't know. How?
I'm going to help you, Johnny. It's the truth I am. Now, tell me, Johnny. Tell me about the lady you killed. Tell me. Come on.
I don't know. I forgot.
Oh, now, come on.
I don't know. I forgot.
Forgot?
Let me alone.
All right, Johnny boy.
Cold.
Get out of the cot, please.
Don't hit me.
Get out.
Cold.
When I say get.
All right, George.
Take this ticking now off your cot. Tear a strip. Tear another. Now, we got... What makes a rope?
Oh, George.
Evelyn.
The strips. Give them to me.
Sure, here.
Yeah. 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3.
That's it, Blee. Braid me a rope from those strips, Blee. Braid me a rope from those strips.
1, 2, 3.
Hello, Mr. Jude. How do you feel? Came to tell you something, Mr. Jude. Come Wednesday, there'll be a hanging, and there'll be you. The governor sent word, and he had this to say. No reprieve. So, there's going to be a hanging. Now, I've got to ask you some things, Mr. Jude. Because the law provides that I do. Do you want a man of the cloth, Mr. Jewett? Do you need a man of the cloth? I've seen them come, Mr. Jewett, and I've seen them go. And I've got to tell you this. Those that ask for the men of the cloth seem better fit for what's going to happen to them. The hanging of them, that is. So if you want a fellow come up and preach to you, talk to you, you just say the word. Now, I got to ask you this. The hanging cap when you tried it on, was it too tight? Was it too snug, Mr. Jewett? Can you breathe all right, I'd like to know. And the coffin ain't too narrow, is it? Seeing as you're a smallish man and all, but it ain't too narrow, is it? Now, something else, too. How you're to behave. As always a kind of woman come shine, come rain, come snow, a kind that's always there, a toucher, a walker over, to pluck your sleeve or pinch your cheek. You pay her no mind but look ahead, and whatever else comes in front of you or alongside, to distract you, pay it no mind. And pay the jeers no mind, or the weeping, but mount the steps. Now, listen, Mr. Jordan, if you've got a little something, a dollar, or two, or three, I'll be glad to see the hangman gets it, and he'll treat you prettily. Tie the rope just right, and adjust just right, and drop you good, straight, and true. And not make you wait too long a time. Think it all over. I'll return again tomorrow.
Vaughn! Vaughn! Vaughn!
What do you want, Johnny?
I'll do it. I want to do it.
Do what, Johnny?
Hang myself.
Well.
I'm going to hang myself, Vaughn.
How?
I'll stand under the coffin and stand under the window and kick away the coffin.
What are you going to use for a rope?
I don't know.
I got a rope.
Give it to me.
Well, I don't know.
Vaughn.
Well, I just don't know.
Let's see your rope.
Rope's the easiest. Rope's the only way. You get simple and use your shirt or something. You're liable just to stand there and cough. Rope's the only way.
Let's see your rope.
Sure, Johnny. See it?
Give it to me.
You haven't finished the story, Johnny.
I forgot. I can't remember, I swear.
Oh.
She was very homely, and I was very lonely, and she stole from me.
Shut up, Johnny. Here's the rope.
George?
Yeah?
What's he doing?
Staring.
What's he staring at, George?
The rope.
What's he doing now, George?
His head bowed down, and he ain't doing nothing.
Now what's he doing?
Walking.
Now?
Walking around.
Ain't put the rope down, has he?
No.
What's he doing now?
He ain't doing nothing.
Is the coffin under the window?
Yeah.
Has he tied the rope to the bars?
Yeah.
What's he doing now? What's he doing?
Do it!
That's it. That's it, Johnny. That's it.
George? Is he?
Yep. Yep.
The next morning was Tuesday, and a very cold day. Since it was the day before the execution, holes had to be chopped out of the ice in order to set in the scaffold posts. Once this was done, however, the rest was easy. A simple platform at the top of 13 steps, and a primitive but often adequate spring mechanism as a trap door. Having given the workmen any special instructions they may have needed, the sheriff re-entered the prison and walked to Mr. Jewett's cell to inform him what all the hammering had been about.
Jewett?
He said.
Jewett?
He went on.
Hanged yourself?
He noted.
Dead?
He made sure of it. Then vent his spleen.
Cheat! Cheat! To have done such a thing. To have cheated the law and the hangman. And the gallows being fairly built to have done such a thing. Cheat! How did you... Born! Come here, Born! You killed him, didn't you?
Killed who?
Jonathan Jewett.
Killed him?
Gave him a rope. He's hanging with strips of bedding, and his bedding ain't touched. Must be you made him a rope.
I ain't killing him, Sheriff, giving a man a rope.
What did you do to him?
Now look for yourself, Sheriff. That stone wall between us. What could I do but talk to him?
You talked him into doing it, then? You were saying that?
Just told him how it is to get hanged in public. No way for a man to die. Is it a way for a man to die, Sheriff?
You gave him rope and you told him what to do. You know what that makes you, Bowen?
What?
A murderer. Same as if you slipped a knife into him. That's what you are. A murderer.
George Bowen was indicted and brought to trial. A charge? Homicide. Murder of Jonathan Jewett. Brought to trial on an interesting charge. And the prosecution had this to say.
By his own confession, the prisoner admits he advised Jonathan Jewett to take his own life. And a man who advises death, I say, is a principal in murder. No other causes incited Jewett to destroy himself. No other causes but the advice of the defendant. The living instrument of a murder is a murderer and must himself die. I charge the jury to find this man guilty.
And the defense had this to say.
I say that the defendant is perhaps guilty of being accessory to murder, but this is not the charge here. The charge is murder. And while I do not stand here to justify his crime, I say to you, if you convict him as charged, you yourselves are guilty of murder under the existing form of law.
And the jury foreman had this to say.
Not guilty.
So Bowen was returned to his cell. A certain pit in Northampton, Massachusetts prison called Cell 4. 43,
44, 45, 46, 47.
In just a moment, Thomas Highland will tell you about next week's crime classic. Jonathan Jewett, tonight's crime classic, was adapted from the original court reports and newspaper accounts by Morton Fine and David Friedkin. The music was composed and conducted by Bernard Herrmann, and the program is produced and directed by Elliot Lewis. Thomas Highland is portrayed on radio by Lou Merrill. In tonight's story, Lee Millar was heard as Jonathan Jewett, and Elliot Lewis as George. Featured in the cast were John Daner, Vic Perrin, Junius Matthews, and Byron Kane. Bob Lamond speaking. And here again is Thomas Highland.
Next week, Mexico City, just 14 years ago. Tippy Tippy Tin was popular north of the border, and south, a man with four names and an alpenstock had an appointment with history. It's listed in my files as The Assassination of Leon Trotsky. Thank you. Good night.
One of the most colorful practices of the Old West was that of sending for mail-order brides. This Saturday night on CBS Radio's program titled Gunsmoke, hear the fascinating details of the arrival in Old Dodge of just such a woman, with romance and double trouble resulting for the citizenry and for United States Marshal Matt Dillon. Don't miss Gunsmoke on most of these same stations this Saturday night. Gangbusters go into action Saturday nights on the CBS Radio Network.
Well, that's our show for this week. I hope you enjoyed it as the old-time radio hour turned to crime. We appreciate your listening, and I hope you can join us again next week when we bring you more classic radio. Until then, this is your host, Justine Ward, saying so long for a while.